Hi there, I'm Carrie Byron, formerly of MythBusters, now Crash Test World, and you're listening to Spoiler Country.
Hey, hey, people of Earth, it's time to enter the Spoilerverse via our secret portal at the exclusive Arctic Club in beautiful downtown Seattle. With our hosts, John and Kenrick and Jeff. Welcome to Spoiler Country.
Hey, if you're listening to our show for the first time and you're on one of the social medias that we're on, like Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, any of those kinds of things, you should always check us out on spoilerverse.com. But if you want to keep up with our latest episodes, you should bring out your smartphone, get into your favorite podcatcher, find Spoiler Country, and hit subscribe. Then you'll get all our new stuff.
And if you want to reach out to us, you can do that in two ways. You can call us, leave us a voicemail at 707-656-2080. Again, 707-656-2080. Or you can shoot us an email at spoilercountry@gmail.com.
Citizens of the Republic of Spoilerverse, welcome back to Spoiler Country. I'm Kenneth Regan. That is Mr. J.N. Horsley. And today on the show, we're super lucky and it's wonderful to have Carrie Byron on, isn't it?
It is. And she's from MythBusters, which was a fantastic show that I've loved watching that one. And it's kind of funny you said J.N. Horsley today.
Yeah, I never say J.N. Horsley.
Yeah, it's kind of funny to say that on this episode for MythBusters because, is it accurate to call me J.N. Horsley? Because that's technically my grandfather, not me. So do you have to signify me? J.N. Horsley the third?
So should I say J. Horsley the fifth? Is that what you said?
No, I'm the third.
Oh, the third. Third in a long line of J's. J.
Yeah. But this is cool. This is a cool one.
Dude, I loved MythBusters. I was bummed when it went off. I don't understand why it went off the air. Except I think the two main hosts weren't the closest? I guess that's a good way of saying it.
I don't know. They're doing their own thing now, too, which is cool.
Yeah. Yeah, but Carrie was awesome.
Yeah. She came on and chatted, and what do you say we just go ahead and get into it and come back and talk about it afterwards?
There you go.
Hello, listeners of Spoiler Country. Today on the show, we have a very special guest, Ms. Carrie Byron. How are you doing, Ms. Byron?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm doing very well. It's a great pleasure to talk to you. I've been a fan of yours for a long time, going back to MythBusters.
Well, thank you. I mean, that's really the first time I was ever on TV. So before that, it would just been like you were a stalker or something.
I mean, did you ever think when you were doing MythBusters that you would become a celebrity?
Oh, heck no. I didn't even know it after MythBusters started. It wasn't until our crew went to Comic-Con for the first time and they booked us for a room so that me, Grant, and Tori could come out and talk to the audience. And the room overfilled and they had to put us in a bigger room. And then the fire marshals came because it was overfilled. And we're like, how big is this room? And we walked in and there was thousands and thousands and thousands of people. And the three of us were like, oh my God, people watch the show. Holy crap, this is crazy. And it was our first time really experiencing that because when MythBusters started, we're a really scrappy crew. We got a couple cameramen, some audio techs. We're all just in a workshop in San Francisco. There's no LA scene. Reality television isn't what it is now. Like, it felt like we were making really weird home movies. So to know that the audience was out there, it almost made it more nerve-wracking when we got home because all of a sudden, instead of just being like us messing around with the camera guy, all of a sudden we're like, oh my God, all those people are watching us right now.
So you felt like the full pressure of an audience.
I got a little more nervous. I am not an inherently TV-ready person. It was trial by fire for sure.
Were there ideas that you initially had to do on Mythbusters that after you found the size of your audience, you were like, you know what, that's too small time for us now. That's small audience, Mythbusters. We got to do like the big stuff. This is, we had change up what we're doing.
Nah, we always just kind of did what was fun for us or what we could build. And usually if there was something really exciting to one of us, like if there was a zombie involved, Tori would get excited, or something where electronics were involved, Grant would get excited. And I was really into crashing cars and weaponry. So it just, you know, we just catered to the things that we found fascinating and went for it.
So, I mean, when you first went to that Comic-Con, what were the expectations for you? I mean, like, what were you thinking you were going to see when you stepped out?
Dude, I had no idea. I didn't. Comic-Con is such a wild beast. It is just this amazing place of costumes and people just getting their freak on and everybody just getting into whatever their geekdom is and going headfirst into it. It is a beautiful thing to see.
It's kind of funny because as an audience member, you just assume that the people you watch on TV know, I guess somehow you think they know you're watching them, or I guess, or like you kind of feel like they know they have a huge fan base. They have to know, you know, that everyone's watching their show. It's weird to think that on the opposite side, you're thinking, is anyone actually tuning into this?
Well, I mean, even when we started Mythbusters, we talked off camera to a producer who was asking the questions, like, what did you think of that build? And you'd just be telling them exactly what you think. You know, it wasn't scripted. So I would say, oh, I was having a really hard time fitting this piece together, blah, 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 just talking to the producer. So I think it really changed when they started asking us to talk directly into the camera, which instead of a warm face that's giving you feedback, it's all of a sudden this cold, dead eye. And I mean, Adam's the only one that was ever trained in any sort of acting whatsoever. So all of us kind of stumbled for a minute looking into the camera because there's no eyes. So at one point, the producer realized that all of us were struggling with this because we are just a bunch of special effects and, you know, artists, that they made a little smiley face out of masking tape and put it above the lens so we could pretend we were talking to the smiley face.
That's wicked funny. I mean, the very definition of what your team was literally called the B team. And I guess with that name, there's an assumption, I guess, maybe on some level that you wouldn't be the star of the show, but in a real way, after a while, you guys kind of became as big as of a star and face of the show the same way as the main team was.
What's funny is because the B team kind of is an inside sports thing. We started out being called the build team because Tori and I and this woman, Scotty, who's an amazing welder, and a contest winner named Christine, we were hired not to be hosts. We were hired to build the backgrounds. So Jamie and Adam come just like show up and do the fun stuff. And then we would clean up the build afterwards. So we were the ones that were doing the nuts and bolts and all the building. But then they realized, you know, they had hired us to make more episodes and make them faster. They realized it wasn't any faster that way. So they thought, okay, well, we'll have them talk and that'll actually fill out more time. So, because, you know, science takes a long time and our experiments take a long time. And the build wasn't necessarily the bulk of what they needed to film. So it was also something interesting to the audience. They like to see how the sausage was made, literally sometimes. Yeah. You know, they love the building. They love seeing all that stuff. So we started to do little asides for the camera and we started to talk to the camera. And then sooner or later, they just pushed us in front of it. And within like a season, they're like, yeah, you guys are hosts now. All of us were just, wait, what? Okay, sure. This seems fun. Let's do this. And then every single time we got renewed, we would think, this is the last season. This won't go on very long. Like, we didn't realize this was going on for over a decade. Like, I thought this was just, you know, my first one of, it just felt like another job, like my first grown-up job.
Well, I mean, I think what it worked for people is that the chemistry between you, Grant, and Philip, I forget the name of the other gentleman.
Tori, sorry
to Tori if he's listening. I mentioned the most important two.
Oh, stop. He is very, very important. And one of my best friends.
Indeed. I'm literally just kidding. But it really was the chemistry between the three of you. Because, I mean, the chemistry between the three of you was better and in many ways more entertaining than between Jamie and Adam.
So, I mean, that's a different kind of chemistry. That's like a little more like, you know, OCC style. Like they respected each other and they were both brilliant in their own way, but they weren't buddies. Whereas me, Tori, and Grant went out to dinner together and had lunch together. And fought like siblings. I mean, we spent so much time together. You know how when you have those people that you go through crazy events with, like you go ziplining with them, like you have a bond that's really strong. We did that every day for like 12 years. So we were more family than a lot of my family because, you know, we're blowing things up and we're building together. Right. And when we first started, we were working 13-hour days, 6 days a week, like on the regular. We spent birthdays there. We abandoned our families for each other. And we literally were picking up and creating shit sometimes. We spent a whole day picking up cow manure and stirring it together and just looking at each other like, this we will always remember.
So when you weren't filming and you guys were just doing your day-to-day interaction with each other offset, did you guys find yourself thinking, maybe I should test that theory right there? You know, I wonder what would happen if I did this and just, you know, think, maybe we could get some paid to be testing this.
I mean, we didn't really talk about work when we got off of work because we were exhausted and it was enough. Mostly like Tori and I love Italian food. So we'd be, you know, a lot of wine and Italian food. You know, we'd be on set together way off in the desert. So we just all go sit in some really dirt bag bar somewhere and have a drink and just relax. Like we did not talk about work if we could avoid it. Save it for the camera.
Well, I think what was fantastic about you guys showing how the sausage was made, as you said, is that it really gave the viewers a respect for what you guys were actually doing. And I think not everyone has enough respect for the difficulty of science. And you guys made it, showed us, you know, this is what it is. This is how hard it is. And, you know, this is how intricate it all is. And I think that was very important.
I really wished you guys as an audience could have, you know, how they have After Dark, Big Brother, whatever, you know, the behind the scenes.
Yeah, yeah.
Because if you could just see the researchers we had, especially in the beginning when nobody knew what Mythbusters was. And if you could have seen them calling places like a butcher shop and being like, no, I need a stomach completely intact with all the bile and all the hoses attached. And they'd be like, wait, what do you mean? We don't sell it like that. And they're like, I know, but we need that. Could you do that for us? And just the confusion or, hey, I'm trying to get a 747 so I can flip a bus. These were requests that were coming through. And so at first, very, very difficult. And slowly people started getting used to the show. And lucky for us that a lot of our fan base, police, fire, engineers, aeronautics, you know, explosive material experts. So the people that we work with were also the people that were into the show because they liked all the same stuff we did.
Well, it was great because you guys must have made some weird ass phone calls to people asking for requests of things. Did you get people hanging up and you're going, you know, that's not funny. Just like click.
At first, or we'd get vetted really hard. it took a while.
And I think before the interview, I did a lot of research, you know, and talked about you in the show. And I actually didn't even realize that Jamie and Ab didn't like each other until actually a couple of days ago when I did the research. I just assumed they did. And what I didn't know is that your background is actually, when you went to University of San Francisco, State University, mm-hmm. your background actually was film and sculpting, not, you know, because I was a little surprised by that. What was the through line between sculpting, filming, and eventually your focus on science?
Well, it's really special effects. All of us have a background in special effects and we're somehow involved in that industry. I was trying to get into that industry and we're all builders. So for what we didn't realize we were really doing a science show. We were using science as a narrative, you know, the scientific method as a narrative vehicle, which is perfect for telling a story. And it just became more of a science show because it just worked out that way. We all used experts and a lot of academia to help us, as well as when the internet got better, it became a lot easier to find our mythology to test. But I think that the whole gag of the show being that we were builders and not scientists made it an easier through line for the audience because we're learning with them. We didn't know when stuff was going to blow up. We didn't necessarily know if things were going to work or not. So when we were excited about things, we were genuinely excited. I'm squealing and screaming because I didn't know how it was going to end up. Whereas maybe if I had had a strong scientific background, I would know that wasn't going to explode and I would be very calm instead of so anxious. So I think that we taught science by learning it.
That was incredible. And I felt I learned a lot by watching it. And I think the other thing that I found was impressive about what you've done since is that you've really seemed to have dedicated your entire life to furthering education for a lot of people. One of the things that you definitely are promoting, and I think is great, is STEAM. And for the listeners of ours who don't know what STEAM is, it stands for Fields of or Defined Science, Technology, Interpreted Through Engineering and Arts, and Basic Mathematics. Why is STEAM something that you felt important enough to dedicate yourself so fully to it?
Well, it's more for me, it's critical thinking. And I really believe that even if you're going for a liberal arts education, you need to have the critical thinking and a science background just as a human being in this world. It's important to have that sort of base knowledge. So I definitely think it's a evolving, constantly interesting industry where it's a good opportunity to help people better themselves. And it's a really great opportunity to have an interesting career. And I've met so many people within the field that encompass everything from creating food to making airplanes. You know, it can be almost anything. So I personally just like the opportunities that a STEAM career is going to offer you.
And I think that's, like I said, that's wonderful. As my day job, I'm a English teacher at a therapeutic high school in Rhode Island. And the importance of STEAM and trying to get our students to recognize the importance of things like math and science and English and reading. I feel like sometimes when they make it to high school, they haven't acquired that respect for those subjects. And I think what you do with your show helps create that for them.
Well, I was just having a lot of fun doing what I did. It's a great byproduct that it had a positive message for the world. Let's not give me too much credit here. Like, I got to blow stuff up. I got to do really cool things. I even learned how to build a still. So I've got a side career if I need it.
But like I said, since then, though, you really have done a great job of focusing on continuing that with science. Because like I said, you're currently now working with a nonprofit organization known as Project Explorer. Mm-hmm. And so for our listeners, what is Project Explorer?
Well, Project Explorer, I do a show called Crash Test World for. And Project Explorer is a nonprofit that has been around for about 17 years. They were streaming videos before YouTube existed. It's really about creating global citizenry through exploration. So a kid in Kenya can see what it's like to be a kid in Japan. You know, a kid in Kansas can see what it's like to be a kid in Mexico. We get to see what the traditions and cultures are of other countries, their food, their ways of life, the way they play. And it's just, you know, it's all about exploration, which is education. So we do what's called edutainment. And Crash Test World specifically is a show on this platform. It's a little like Netflix for education, if you think of it that way. And the show I do, I travel around the world. Well, I did before the pandemic, but I travel around asking big questions, exploring different places, like how art's preserved in a different culture, how we celebrate death. On our current season, we did one in New York, how do mega cities function? We did one on how do we live in peace in a place of great conflict? And we went to Israel. And, you know, we talk to mostly innovators and people who are coming up with great solutions. I mean, we went to a surf camp in Israel where everybody leaves the politics on the beach and in the water, everybody's just catching a wave. And it's, you know, beautiful organizations that are donating surfboards to try to create peace. I mean, there's all sorts of ways to make the world a better place. And I am lucky enough to get to give a signal boost to the people that are really trying to do that.
Now, is the title Crash Test World based on your book, Crash Test Girl, that came out, was it 2 years ago, I think it was, 3 years?
Oh my God, I think it was 100 years ago. It's been a long year, but yeah, I wrote a book, Crash Test Girl, which basically I wrote the whole book on a dare because I was talking to I was sitting at a bar with Thomas Dolby. He was the singer from the 80s, you might remember, that did that song, She Blinded Me With Science.
Yes.
Okay, so
yes,
sitting in a bar with him, Homer Hickam, who wrote Rocket Boys, which became October Sky, Emily from Emily's Lab on Netflix. Back then, she was a science influencer. And it was just this really eclectic group of wonderful people. Reed Timmer, the guy who chases storms. And we were all just having a drink together. And Homer was just like, you've got a lot of great stories. You should write a book. Like, nah, I'm not going to write a book. That's crazy. That's what you do. That's so vulnerable and scary. That is way too scary for me. I went home from that. And my daughter was having trouble in school and she was very young at the time. And I looked at her and I'm like, you know, superheroes aren't about having super strength and you know, being able to have laser beams from their eyes. Their bravery comes from doing something scary and still doing it. And I walked in the next room and went, crap, I got to write a book now. I have to take the advice to give my daughter, which is, that's how you're brave, is you do something scary. So I wrote the book and that kept me busy for a while in between TV shows. And then we started to do an untitled show for Project Explorer, which then when we were trying to think of a title, we just thought Crash Test World. We're really seeing the world through your eyes. So let's take it after the book.
And like, and I think the TV show, I keep saying TV show. It's not a TV show. It's a,
it will be very soon. It's going to be airing on Discovery.
I noticed it's supposed to be at the end of this year. Is that correct? Or is it going to be now after 2021 hits?
I have no idea. Discovery Channel has had a full season of that show since I premiered it in February in New York. So they're just sitting on it. I'm not sure when they're going to release it. Hopefully very, very soon. So feel free to Twitter them or Instagram them and ask them.
Yeah, maybe I'll borrow them. I'll give a weekly text out. They'll be like, where's the damn show?
P.S. When can we see it? You can see portions of it because what Project Explorer does, which is very cool, is that, you know, we have this highly produced half hour of content that is a television show that you will see on TV. We break it up into pods of the different stories that we tell. And then they come with a free lesson plan for parents and teachers. So if you want to learn about beekeeping in Detroit and have a full lesson plan on it, you can get a lesson plan that's tailored to lower school, middle school, or high school. And all of the content is appropriate for all ages. It's really family viewing, which is perfect for the Discovery brand, but also just it's something that we always wanted to achieve with MythBusters and now with this, which is never to underestimate the intelligence and the sophistication of children and teenagers. I usually speak to what I feel is a tween audience, but I've learned long ago, if you want to explain something to a 12-year-old, explain it like they're 35. If you want to explain something to a 35-year-old, explain it like they're 12 and you'll have a better follow through.
Well, I totally agree. When I teach my classes, the one thing I have learned is that you talk to your students as if they're adults. For one, they're going to be eventually, so they should learn, you know, how to respond and talk, be spoken to as an adult. And I do think they are more than willing. They're more willing to listen to you when you do that. When you talk to them, or I would say down to them, or condescend to them, I do think they should. They know that immediately. They can read you better than adults can.
Oh, nothing drives me more crazy than watching adults baby talk to children, especially kids who are about, you know, 10 or 11, when they talk to them like this, drives me crazy. Cause I know I've got an 11-year-old and she looks at me like, are you kidding me with this right now?
Yeah. I've gotten in trouble a couple of times at school. Like I said, I teach at a high school, but it's like a therapeutic school. So a couple of the adults, for some reason, because they're therapeutic kids, feel a need to talk to them as if they're younger. And I've gotten into some trouble yelling at them about it. That you don't, it's insulting. I mean, they're just because they have, you know, usually some emotional issues does not mean that they're not their age. You know, they're probably on some levels more aware of themselves and mature than a lot of other teenage would be in that same situation.
Oh man, kids now too are so well informed. They are so sophisticated. They know so much more than we ever did at their age. It's good and bad in many, many ways. But you can never underestimate them.
Now, the videos that I saw on the Project Explorer website, they're cut into 5-minute clips. Mm-hmm. Will the show when it hits Discovery be hour-long programs or these 30-minute programs that when we finally see them?
30 minutes. Nobody's got time for an hour-long program these days. That's a movie. Come on.
I assume with COVID, everything pretty much has just stopped on the filming of the... Are we working on the second season?
I mean, we're ready to go. We're kind of in a little bit of a holding pattern because some of the places we were supposed to go got shut down. We were supposed to do something in like Pakistan and Turkey and like places that Cambodia, we were like about to go. And then it's just things got a little too out of hand and we can't travel and we can't take that kind of risk. So second season, we have a million ideas and we will jump on the road very soon, even if it's reformatting to go to Minnesota and Portland. You know, we will change for the culture.
And in watching the show, and it, correct me if I'm wrong, but it feels like the main theme of Crash Test World is recognizing the similarities across different cultures and understanding those differences. And so just because the culture maybe has some differences from yours, it, once again, it feels like the difference is understanding why those differences exist. And then trying, by doing that, building a appreciation for those cultures.
Yeah, we're all more alike than different. We all want our families to be safe. We all want to love. We want to play. We want to eat. Like, we have all of the same base core. So when it comes down to it, we're really more alike than different. And I just find when you want to create a familiarity, you know, if you want to tell a big story, like you want to talk about the refugee crisis, you don't just jump in and talk about the refugee crisis. You find one person going through it that you can relate to, and then you can see yourself in them, and then you will have empathy. For me, my whole drive in this new show is about creating empathy in the world and helping us all see how alike we really are.
There's, in my opinion, a beautiful moment in one of the earlier episodes of Crash Test World. I'm going to probably pronounce everything correctly, so I'm going to apologize ahead of time. I'm definitely going to say it all wrong. Qatar or Qatar?
That I spent a long time trying to figure that out because it really is a generational thing. It's Qatar.
Qatar.
Close enough. Yeah, it's everyone here said Qatar. And when I got there, some people said Qatar, and then some people said Qatar. So I practiced a bunch. it's kind of in between, but I'm probably saying it wrong as well.
Well, I'm going to apologize to any listeners that may exist in Qatar or whatever. I'm going to say it wrong, and I don't mean disrespect. There was a woman in the episode. Her name is, I'm going to say this one wrong too.
Shaima?
Okay, Shaima. And you and Shaima are discussing food habits. And it's a very small moment in the show. And some people, might only last a couple of seconds, but to me, it actually meant a lot. There was a comment about, she was showing you how to signify when you don't want any more food. And it was and you shook your cup as a way of saying no more food. And you commented, well, where I come from, that's how we say, that's when we want more food. That's what we do. It's just a minor difference, but it kind of shows that little things between cultures may get misconstrued as something. But when you learn about the culture and you spend some time with them, you do recognize and appreciate it far more, these little things. And it helps, I think, people understand each other better.
You might be insulting somebody with something that you think is so innocuous. It's beautiful to figure out other cultures that way. And you know what's really funny about that particular moment you're talking about? We were drinking. She kept calling it coffee, but it looked like tea because it was green and it was light in color. And we were filming this at night. So I'm thinking there's no caffeine in this. And I am just drinking more and more and more because it was delicious and it had this beautiful smell to it. And then we started talking about green coffee. And the more you roast coffee, the less caffeine it has, which is why espresso one-to-one with a shot of, you know, Dunkin' Donuts coffee has the same amount of caffeine. You know, like a shot of espresso isn't stronger like alcohol. And so I drank a ton of super highly caffeinated beverage right before bed. And I was bouncing off the walls. I could not sleep. I was like binge watching shows. I was reading. I was trying. I was exercising. Just like, oh my God, I just drank like a pot of coffee. This is crazy.
See, that's when you should have filmed the next episode.
Right? I don't think that my crew would appreciate that being off of a 12-hour day on their feet. But
and I think the other cool part, and I think it happened just like a moment later when Shaima is telling you the hand in which you used to eat and which you don't use another hand. Once again, just these minor things I normally wouldn't even thought of myself. I think, holy crap, that's an amazing insight. Once again, into a different culture that you probably wouldn't have thought about unless you saw the show.
It was really a beautiful place to be. And it was really interesting to learn so much. And I even just down to the abaya that she wore, I thought I was going to put on, you know, the I was in the middle of the desert. I thought it was going to be very hot, and I put it on and was so surprised to actually feel cool, because I always thought it was a religious thing, but it's actually helps with the elements, because it creates a chimney effect when you wear that clothing that releases the heat out of it, because the fabric shakes back and forth. So I got a little bit of science of clothing and found out more about them as a people. It was beautiful.
And like I said, I was able to watch all the episodes, and I thought they were incredible. There's an episode called Desert Farming, which I thought was also very, very entertaining and very informative. And I thought when I was watching Desert Farming is that as an American, you look at our country, we are extremely arrogant about ourselves in a way, you know, that we think we're the most advanced, you know, country in the world, and all this stuff. And then you watch something like Desert Farming, and you realize how just exceptional the exceptional level of innovation that exists within a country like Qatar as well. And I was wondering, like, what kind of, since you spent time there, what kind of stuff can the United States learn from the scientific achievements of Qatar?
You know what? I think that we as a world just can learn from the diversity of the world. I think that bringing lots of different people from lots of geoeconomic backgrounds and actual, you know, different places on the map, we all come with such a different perspective. I think it comes down to diversity more than anything else. I think somebody from Rhode Island and somebody from San Francisco could probably come up with some pretty good ideas, just as you bring in any diversity, which is the reason I'm stumbling a little bit, because I think I'm tired, but Mythbusters was the same way. We all came from very different backgrounds, and so, you know, different places, and I think it was easier for us to come up with solutions because we approached every problem with such different mindsets. So I think it's more about global diversity than anything else.
And I think it's one thing that your show demonstrated very well. And the other thing your show demonstrated very well as well is the importance and the use of technology. There was another episode where, translate for me, where you discussed a new app called Tarjimly.
Oh, Tarjimly, the peninsula.
Yeah, and the idea is that it's an entire app that kind of is designed to help people come together, because once again, it eliminates the language barrier that we have.
It's like a FaceTime translator in real time. So, you know, I took that app with me down to Chinatown with one of the founders just to try to order, you know, talking to people that obviously speak English, but I asked them to speak Chinese to me, and we used a translator that it pings people all over the world that can translate between those two languages. And instead of trying to type something in that you might not understand, you get a person, you're like, ask him if this comes in other sizes. and then they say it right in real time.
And I think that was incredible. Once again, it's just one more step to bring a large world closer together. And I think, once again, another important app, and introducing that to people who may not have seen the app is also a very important job that you're providing as well. And I also, and one question I had when I was watching your show is that, do you think in the future society will be able to reconcile like the dual aspect of technology? Because there's obviously a lot of benefits, there's some negatives as well. Do you think at some point we'll be able to figure out how to properly balance it in our lives?
Oh, goodness, I sure hope so. I've got an 11-year-old, and the two of us are just, both of us had a moment today where, like, we look at our phone too much. We look at the computer too much, and we shut everything down, and we went and we played cards for an hour. We both had a moment of just, why are we relating to each other? We're stuck in the house together. Turn off the TV, turn off all the electronics. Let's go. And I taught her, you know, I taught her a little bit of 21 in poker.
Yeah.
Yeah, we played a little bit of everything, but it was just, wow, I just had a very present moment. I love this. I forgot we just, some of the best times I had growing up were when the power goes out. I think sometimes we just need the power to go out for us.
Yeah, I you're totally right. Because I feel like social media, which in the idea of it should be that we learned and had the opportunity to talk to more people, and then and thus widens our consciousness of what the world is like. I feel like in many ways, being on social media has eliminated on some level our ability to interact with people who are actually around us.
I think you're right. But at the same time, currently without social media, I don't know how much of a job I would have. I run a travel show. I'm having a hard time doing anything off of the Zoom these days. So yes, I am a big proponent of both technology and anti-technology.
I think that's kind of the direction we're in. Within the next few decades, is something we do have to figure out and try to properly approach technology in a way that is positive and eliminate obviously some of the negatives. My last question for you, Glenn, I do appreciate your time with me, is you're also part of the Grant Imahara Foundation. What are its goals and how can our listeners help support it?
I am a supporter of it, but I wouldn't say I'm a part of it. There are people way above my pay grade that take care of that kind of stuff. Grant was a beautiful, wonderful person, and he believes so much in helping people and helping kids. And so it's very STEAM and STEM motivated. So the Grant Imahara Foundation is raising money to help kids in their STEM futures. I talk about it, I start to get very misty-eyed because I have pictures of him all over my house and I miss him. It's still very raw for me. But if you go watch the video on their foundation website, they do this beautiful animation that I dare you not to cry if you have love for Grant. He's a good dude. We're going to be raising a bunch of money for it very soon. All of the props for MythBusters, I believe, are going to be auctioned off. They've been in a museum up until now. So stand by for that. It's we're trying to source how to do it at the moment, but you could own a little piece of MythBuster history and with Grant's foundation.
Is there any part that's being put on the foundation that you're going to like maybe on the down low buy yourself without your name being popped up?
I don't need any of that stuff. I stole everything I wanted when I left. I filled my car up with all sorts of great things. Yeah, I'm good.
Well, like I said, I mean, and it's great that foundation does exist. Cause like I said, I was definitely one of those fans who, yeah, it was shocking, devastating when obviously Grant passed. And I think it was fantastic that his name is being used for something that's positive. And it sounds like it definitely is.
Yeah.
And I hope our listeners do find the page and donate.
Yeah. Just follow it for a while. Cause it's going to do some exciting stuff. And it's really a beautiful way to keep his memory alive. And his mother is very involved.
Great. So for Crash Test World, how can our listeners support it before it actually becomes a Discovery TV show? And I don't know, maybe push in the right direction. I mean, what can we do to help the foundation out and Project Explore out at this point?
You know, you can find every. I am very active on Instagram and Twitter. I am Carrie Byron on Twitter, and I'm the real Carrie Byron. Because I couldn't get my own name on the Facebook and Instagram. And you can find all the updates for Crash Test World and for anything I'm up to. And I've got links to Grant on there as well. But projectexplorer.org, you can check out and get lesson plans because we're all remote learning if you're a parent right now. So you can, it might be a little bit of something family oriented that's also educational.
I will say, unfortunately, at my school, we're actually, the kids are in the classrooms in my state.
Wow.
We already had our third COVID potential outbreak.
Okay,
not good for us, unfortunately. Yeah, thank you so much. I do need it. But yeah, so definitely follow the foundation and keep in mind, look for the real Carrie Byron to our listeners. Apparently, they may be fake Carrie Byrons running around.
Twitter, avoid Twitter the fake is a very easy place to get a hold of me. Carrie Byron, K-A-R-I-B-Y-R-O-N. It's just my name. Much easier.
Well, thank you so much, Ms. Byron, for talking with me. I greatly appreciate it. You are fantastic to talk to and great entertaining.
Oh, I'm glad I got to talk to you too, and have a wonderful night.
And we're back.
And we're back.
So what was your favorite MythBusters episode?
The propane tanks when they try to blow them up.
Oh, that one was good. You know what mine was?
Yeah. What?
When they tried to prove or disprove, if you're driving in a convertible, if you go fast enough, if the speed off of your windshield will make it to where you don't need to have the top on while it's raining.
Oh. What was the final outcome?
Yeah. Falcon was that there is a certain speed. If the rain is right and you're going fast enough and your hood and your windshield is the right angle, you can actually drive in the rain without getting wet. But you have to stay consistent because as soon as you slow down, the rain gets in your car.
Yeah. Didn't they do a thing with Rocket Man?
Probably. I mean, they did so much stuff.
Yeah, they did so many episodes. And I know they did Shark Week a lot. And that was a great show. Yep.
It was a fantastic show.
I bet she misses being on that show a lot.
I miss that show just in general because it was just a good show. Because I like the fact that it was science in a fun, exciting way, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Hold on a second.
As a kid, you always dream of having the workshop like that where you can just screw around with stuff and blow stuff up and make things and destroy things just for the sheer hell of it. And they got to do it and get paid for it.
Yeah, it was sad when Grant Imahara passed away.
Yeah, that sucked.
It came out of nowhere. This summer.
Yeah.
I don't think it wasn't even COVID related, yeah. Right?
Was it this year?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. It was just back in July.
Oh man. Last year. 2020 is the longest year ever.
Oh God, 2020 is weird because it's been both the longest year, a lot of sadness, but personally one of the best years of my life.
Yeah, I've had a lot of great personal growth in this year, but it's been a weird, weird year.
It was a overall, weird, well, like, not this year anymore. 2020 is gone.
It was, yeah.
It's 2021, baby!
It was a weird year. Yeah, and this is going to be a good year, god dang it. All right?
That's right.
It's going to be a good year.
That's right. Well, thanks a lot for Carrie to coming on and talking Mythbusters and telling us what's going on with her today. It was a lot of fun. Hopefully she'll come back around soon and we'll have a whole chat all over again.
Yeah, it'd be a lot of fun. Yeah.
If you guys enjoyed that episode as much as John and I, or Jay Horsley III and I, then yeah. I highly, highly recommend, I implore you, so to speak, to go to spoilerverse.com. And there you will find all of the back issues of Spoiler Country, where you can enjoy a ton of interviews with... I can't even begin to rattle off the amount of people we've had on, but we've had some huge names on, to independents on, because we just love to learn what people are doing. And it's been a lot of fun. And I would hope you can go back there and check it out.
Yeah. And last year alone, in the year of 2020, we released 332 episodes. So there's definitely something there for everybody. So go check it out. I guarantee
so ridiculous.
There's something there you like. It is. We put out more episodes last year than we put out in 2017, 2018, and 2019 combined. Because in our first 3 years, we put out 219 episodes, and now we're up to 550-something.
Oh, it's nuts. It's so nuts.
Yeah.
I remember when we first started seeing people that had like 80 episodes out or 200 episodes out, and they've been going for a year and a half or 2 years or 4 years or even 10 years and be like, oh my God, we'll never have... that many episodes. And a long time ago, folks, there was an actual conversation that John was worried that we were going to run out of ideas.
Well, considering, if you think about it, from
500 episodes later,
from like November, say from November 15th until December 31st, we put out more episodes than we put out in all of 2017.
There you go.
In a month and a half. So,
John, tell him about
the
store.
On the store, well, you can buy a t-shirt, a hoodie, a face mask. You look fly as hell. Support our logo, support the Spoilerverse logo, or any one of the other podcast logo on there. And every time you buy something on that, it gives us a couple of dollars to help keep this going and support the site that we spend all this time on for you to enjoy.
There you go. And what about the Discord?
Well, if you want to come chat with us and tell us how amazing we are or how amazing we're not, whichever one, you can go to scpod.us/discord. And join our public Discord server and chat up with us and all the other members of Spoilerverse and other fans out there alike.
There you guys go. I think that's a show, huh?
Yeah, that's a show.
There you go. All right, guys. Don't forget, in oceans of podcasts, we are Cthulhu. And as Cthulhu compels you to do, open the mind and read more.